No one would have believed in the early years of the 21st century that our world was being watched by intelligences greater than our own. That as men busied themselves about their various concerns, they observed and studied. The way a man with a microscope might scrutinize the creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacency, men went to and fro about the globe, confident of our empire over this world. Yet, across the gulf of space, intellects vast and cool and unsympathetic regarded our planet with envious eyes. And slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to The Invasion. The Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop, for now, because we are recording this, and yes, the continuity is going to be a little wacky for the next couple of weeks. Next episode is actually recorded before this one, so as of this recording, the Oscars have happened, but as of next week, they haven't. Understood? Good. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey. With me today is Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, hello. Hello.
And sitting in the Trish spot is the vivacious, the lovely, the absolutely amazing Tyler Cox.
How's it going?
Good, man.
I may not be Trish, but I have the boobs.
So classy.
So remember when I said something might go horribly, horribly wrong at Oscar time? Yeah. Never go against Pixar. That's all I'm saying. Never going against Pixar.
I think we all learned that.
Yeah, but I did. Because I went with my heart instead of my head.
Fool.
Yeah. I'm really pissed at you. Because I was doing really well. I did pretty well as a whole out of the 24 categories. I got 12 of them. Sam got 13. But so did Tyler.
The guy that didn't see a single freaking movie.
Except for Logan.
Except for Logan. And Guardians. And
then
Jedi.
He threw the Best Picture nomination.
I still think that should have won. Hudson Hawk is still a wonderful movie.
And he did actually have a legitimate picture that on the list that he didn't say on the air, which was Dunkirk, and still didn't get it. But he, without seeing a fuck all, he's still tied for first place. So... in a couple of weeks, hopefully when Trish is back, we will commence the punishment / prize of, I guess Sam will be taking over the host spot.
Yes.
Which, I don't know, if I was just him, I'd just delegate.
It may happen, we'll see.
We'll see? Okay.
Yeah. I might want to see you squirm with how poorly I'm going to do it.
Ugh, I already added you enough. And Tyler, you get to brag, so do you want to do it now? And I'll just clip it and run it for next few weeks.
You'll just clip it. I don't know. I haven't thought a good brag.
Okay. Yeah, see, right now he's got the silent gloat face.
You fools! Oh, I just blew Jay's ears right out.
Yeah,
sorry,
you totally
dude.
Did. It was awesome. That's okay. I am used to that happening, especially when Trish laughs.
Yes.
So today we're going to be talking about War of the Worlds. It's about time we hit one of the big invasion movies. And this is part of my birthday month that Sam has gifted me.
Yes, I did. So...
Two more after this.
Yes. One's already in the can, but...
That's right.
But yes, there's still two more after this of Jay's birthday month.
Yeah, listen to this asshole. Jay's birthday month.
Well, oh, and it is Tyler's birthday month, too.
It is Tyler, too. Tyler and I share the same birthday. But as a semi-regular guest, he doesn't get the gift of whatever movie he wants to do.
I'm not special.
You're kind of special. You're sitting here right now. You got the Trish spot. You're keeping it warm for Trish. Yeah. Keep the gas in.
No, I eat better now. That doesn't happen as often.
As he's drinking this green slime in front of me.
It's good.
It's good. This is he's got his vial of alien juice with him.
Yes. Today. Yeah, there was nothing that color in either of the movies, though.
No. No. Okay, first thing, we're going to get a lot of people going, there are more than two War of the Worlds movies. Yes, we know. We just covered the two big ones.
Because we just don't have time to watch all of them.
There's a lot of them. It's like, and I think when we do Invasion of the Body Snatchers, it'll be watch whatever fuck one you want, because there's so goddamn many of them. So many versions of it. And, I mean, you could even include Independence Day on this list as well, because it's very much follows the War of the Worlds.
It's definitely clearly inspired by it. And I was thinking, as I was watching the 2005 remake, I'm like, oh, yeah, Independence Day really does owe a lot to this story in this film. But, I mean...
Well, I remember when Independence Day came out, I had bought a re-release of War of the Worlds on VHS, the 1953. So they were very aware.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, the Independence Day is... definitely a different story. It's inspired by, but very much a different story.
Yeah, it's not a strict remake, but none of these are.
Yeah.
Like, the 1953 is taking some beats from the H.G. Wells, but I think it takes more of the story from the Orson Welles radio play from 1938, October 30th, 1938, that freaked out a nation.
Yeah, that documentary that you asked me to watch... It had some interesting points to make. Mm-hmm. It was a little boring, but it had some
totally into it. But yeah. I love that stuff. I've always loved the original film. It was right up there with Star Wars and Star Trek and other sci-fi stuff for me.
I just was expecting more about the broadcast and less about the state of the nation, which was really interesting.
Yeah,
but it was,
well, it gives some clarity as to why they bought it. It bought into this thing that was clearly listed as a Mercury Theater radio play if you looked at your listings, but it wasn't the big radio program at the time, so if you tuned in missing the intro, it does sound very legitimate.
Yes, yeah, when you have people with the gravitas of Orson Welles delivering that dialogue, you can see how it would certainly impact people in a very emotional way, especially with some of the things they explained sort of with the World War Two starting to occur in Europe. And
yeah, you had the financial collapse that was going on at the time, plus the building of those tensions in Germany and the threat of pulling the U.S. into that war, which inevitably did happen. So there was a lot of tension happening in the U.S. and a lot of paranoia.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And then you add, like, as you said, the fact that so many people were tuning in partway through and had missed the fact that it had been announced as a radio play. And Orson Welles' stubbornness contributed to that a little bit, too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, after, a statement the next day on Halloween. Yeah. But, he must have been in his glory with that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they clearly said that he was told to make an announcement. He went on for several more minutes before making that announcement.
Oh, yeah. He was definitely playing.
He was.
Playing the crowd.
Yeah. The more, I was reading about Orson Welles after watching the documentary. I'm like, you know what? Orson Welles was a bit of a dick.
A bit of a dick, but a genius, too.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And I didn't realize that John Houseman was one of his...
Yeah, I didn't know that either until that documentary. Yeah. Guys, if you're wondering about it, there's a documentary on Netflix right now about the World of Worlds broadcast. what was it called? The Real War of the Worlds or something like that?
Something like that. It was American Century War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really tired, so I did.
The dramatizations were a bit cheesy.
Oh, they were wonderful because they were so cheesy. Yeah, I really enjoyed those. But yeah, it was an interesting background for sure.
Yeah. Now I figured it'd be a good kind of backup story to what we're going to talk about, because you can't really talk about these movies without talking a little bit about the original radio play as well as the H.G. Wells novel. Yeah. And no, they're not related. There's an E in one of them.
Yes. Orson has an E. H.G. does not.
Yes.
Why is everybody looking at me?
He's like, I can't spell. Don't look at me.
You've read my blog.
As I said, this is based on the H.G. Wells novel from 1897. So it is public domain. So even you can make a War of the Worlds movie right now. Right now. No legal consequence. Except, I don't know, there might be some trademarks that Paramount have.
Yeah, you'll want to look into that to make sure.
But there have been other non-Paramount War of the Worlds, and especially from The Asylum. That's why we didn't go there. Yeah. The original movie was from 1953, has an IMDb score of 7.1 out of 10, and a Rotten Tomatoes score of 85% with an audience score of 71%, which kind of matches the IMDb score. Shame on you, because it's way better. Well, I don't know. They're both decent movies. Directed by Byron Haskin, who directed lots of Outer Limits episodes and From Earth to the Moon. Screenplay was by Barry Lyndon, who wrote The Lodger as well. This movie was budgeted at $2 million in 1953.
That's a lot of money.
Wow,
by today's standard, I did the math. By today, that's $18.6 million. And it had a U.S. gross of $4.36 million, and that converts to about $40.6 million U.S. in today's money. So it did quite well. Out of that budget, about $600,000 went to the cast. Everything else went to the sets and special effects. So $1.4 went to the special effects.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 1953, and I think they did quite a good job. I mean, all of those UFOs, the Martian ships, were to scale. They weren't tiny really? Little models. They were full size. That's why I have such good movement in them. And this is before internal electronics, so when they're elevated by all these wires, some of them are for lighting and power and whatnot. And then their phaser fire was that was so interesting to watch, because everything's kind of superimposed, right?
Yeah.
It still stands up, though.
Yeah.
Like, it actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, every now and again, you'll see one of the Cobra-like eye stalks pointing in the wrong direction from the laser. Yeah. So it'll be pointing down, but it'll be going straight or whatever, because they were trying to create something from scratch. They didn't want to use the Ray Harryhausen Go Motion stuff that was popular at the time, or models. They went with something fairly big. I mean, you're still having actors acting towards nothing, but that might be one of the first cases of it.
It maybe, yeah. I you know, it's they look really cool. And you can even tell that there's a certain homage to that even in the remake. Mm-hmm. There's something about the look that you could tell was inspired by the 1953 film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they certainly modernized it and made them look more menacing, but there's a look to them that made me feel like they were paying a little bit of homage to the 1953.
Yeah, they couldn't do... I think even the original scripts, because there are a couple of times where they say the alien ships are standing right there, right next to us. So at one point in the script, before they changed it, was they were going to go with the tripods, which is the classic H.G. Wells, realizing they just couldn't get down that movement, or just didn't know how to do it. That's when they went with the more UFO kind of look.
Either way, it works.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that I found really cheesy was the red, green, blue lens. Right? That was the only thing that really put me off, especially when you saw, if I got to see the aliens, that is like, yeah, that doesn't, that they look like machines at that point.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only real flaw that I had with the way they looked.
I thought they looked like Muppets, the aliens.
It was 1953.
Well, they were.
Right, they looked like Muppets.
Your only flaw was just a red, green, blue lens?
Yeah, when you consider when the film was made, yeah.
I got to give him credit for not doing anything super humanoid looking.
Yeah.
That was something that I liked about Lost in Space as well. They do an alien in there, and sometimes they were just completely out there and completely foreign to what we would know.
Yeah, no, and I like the fact that, they didn't look like the aliens that we see from Area 51 conspiracies, right?
Yeah, and they're very careful. We really only get the one time to see them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they're very careful. They show it to you. There's a lot of building towards it. In these type of movies, you almost want to make the ships characters of themselves to feel as scary and alien as what's inside. So you don't have to see what's inside to be freaked out by it.
I mean, exactly.
Granted, they're destroying everything around you, so you should be freaked out.
You should be freaked out. And it adds to the fear because these ships are, they can't damage them. Mm-hmm. Right. So of course it's frightening and scary. And by not seeing the weakness of the aliens themselves, you just enhance that fear and terror because there's nothing that you can't fight them.
Exactly.
I just think it would have been better if you just never saw the aliens at all in the movie. Right at the end when the hand comes out.
Yeah, and I'm glad there's certain things that Spielberg pulled into his straight from this film, just because he obviously loved it as well when he was a kid.
Yeah.
And yes, we are going to be talking about the 2005 movie by director Steven Spielberg. He didn't go anywhere, really. He directed movies like nobody's ever heard of, like Amblin and Duel and Sugarland Express. It's a shame nothing happened with this guy. But
Spielberg, I think I saw one of his movies once.
Yeah, but, War of the Worlds wasn't bad. 2005 has an IMDb score of 6.5 out of 10, not as well liked. It has a Rotten Tomato score of 74% and only an audience score of 42%. It's not that bad, guys.
It's not that good either, though.
No.
The screenplay, and I would put a lot of that on the heels of Tom Cruise, but
yes.
The screenplay is by Joss Friedman, who scripted things like Avatar 2, The Black Dahlia, and Chain Reaction, as well as David Coep, who we've probably talked about before on the show, but he's written movies like Spider-Man, Jurassic Park, and Mission Impossible. So, yeah, he's been around.
He's been around.
He did a lot of the heavy lifting on this one. The movie has a budget of $132 million. That's a lot of dough.
Yes, it is.
And had a U.S. gross of $591.7 million. So, it did all right. It did all right.
Yeah, that director, his films do tend to make money. Right? On those low budgets and stuff like that, it's pretty easy to make money. But
low budgets of $132 million.
Yeah.
from 13 years ago. 13 years ago. I can't believe that's 13 years ago already.
It is pretty astounding, actually.
That's right. Now, the original movie, I didn't actually get into the cast of the original movie. The 1953 movie starred Gene Barry, Anne Robinson, Les Tremaine, Robert Cornwaite, and Sandro Giglio, and a whole bunch of other people. But Gene Barry and Anne Robinson made cameos in the 2005 Spielberg movie. Did you catch it?
No.
No.
Yeah, well, you did see it. You just didn't know. You didn't see them. You didn't recognize them because they're a whole lot older from 1953.
And I wasn't looking for them.
Does that help?
They're the parents. They're the grandparents. Yeah.
Correct. They're the grandparents right at the end of the film. So there's your cameo, your gratuitous remake cameo that we love to see in movies. The 2005 movie starred Tom Cruise, Dakota Fanning, Tim Robbins, reuniting Tom and Tim from Top Gun.
Yes.
Miranda Otto, Justin Chatwin, Rick Gonzalez, Yul Vasquez, and we keep getting into people whose names are getting harder to pronounce.
Yeah. And it's funny, Tim Robbins did not age as well as Tom Cruise. Just got to say that.
Yeah.
definitely not.
No.
No, but, and I love the juxtaposition of Tim Robbins, who's like one of the tallest men in Hollywood, against Tom Cruise, who's considered one of the shorter men in Hollywood. It works so well.
It works really well in that scene. And we will definitely get into that, but I'm going to run the trailer for the classic 1953. So sit back, enjoy the audio awesomeness, and we will come back and talk more War of the Worlds.
Could be the beginning of the end for the human race. For what men first thought were meteors or the often ridiculed flying saucers are in reality the flaming vanguard of the invasion from Mars.
Looks like they're going to come out of that gully pretty soon. We'll have to rush our defenses to be ready when they do.
The guard need plenty of reinforcements.
We'll get them. Lieutenant, look!
They slash across country like scythes, wiping out everything that's trying to get away from them. That explains why communication is cut the moment their machines begin moving.
Montreal's blacked out. Nothing more's come through.
Same thing that happened on the Pacific Coast. Anything from them yet?
No, Mr. Secretary. We've had nothing from San Francisco for over 5 hours.
The nations of the world mobilize their armed might, rushing to defend the Earth against the unknown weapon of the super race from the Red Planet. Is there nothing that can stop the Martian death machines?
Tanks, bombs, they're like toys against them.
We know now that we can't beat their machines.
We've got to beat them.
All over the world, human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies, whom no one has ever seen. Panic that sweeps around the globe as the great masses of mankind flee blindly in a headlong stampede of hysteria.
There's another classic trailer. We always love the 50s trailers because
they're so dramatic. I love it.
They're awesome.
I should read out when, because words emblazoned on the screen when all that music's going, and they're always fantastic.
I wish they'd do more trailers like that, like these days.
We've talked about that before, and we agree.
Yeah.
Instead of showing us all the best bits from your movie, build up the anticipation, and so that when we see those best bits in the film, we're happy instead of like, oh, fuck, he did it again. Yeah, you showed me all the parts that I was interested in the trailer, so I didn't have to pay my $13 to go see this fucking movie.
Okay, that's my challenge. If you guys are video editors out there, if we have some fans who are video editors out there, I want you to post on YouTube and make sure you tag us or email us about it. Make a trailer in the classic 50s vein, but something a little more modern. A modern science fiction. It could be Rogue One. It could be
any Avengers movie.
Any Avengers, yeah. But do it like an old 50s style with the big band and the words blazing across the screen. That would be really cool.
Captain America, First Avenger would probably be really good for that.
Yeah, it's built for that.
Yeah, it is built for that, totally.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's...
That's too easy, though.
Yeah, that's kind of a gimme.
No, but it'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would be awesome. Yeah, no, I'd love to see something like that.
Yeah. What's that other Tom Cruise movie? Edge of Tomorrow.
Yes.
Do it for Edge of Tomorrow. Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one.
That was a good... That was a good movie.
That's one of his more underrated movies. I think it's one of the best modern science fiction movies.
Yeah, I didn't want to like it because Tom Cruise was in it.
I think a lot of people didn't, but it's amazing.
Good. It's really smart. Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the first 2.5 acts are... The last half of the third act was a little floppy, but for the most part, it was a solid film.
You got to pull them out of the loop after a while. So.
Yeah. That's one thing they could have handled just a smidge better.
Yeah, and if inevitably, I'm going to have audience people going, oh, I hate Tom Cruise. Don't email me about it. I know a lot of people do for stupid reasons.
Yeah,
but
you know what? If you hate Tom Cruise, you better be able to justify it that I just hate Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Because you know what? If you really think about it, he's in a lot of movies you fucking love.
Exactly. And if nothing else, you got to watch Edge of Tomorrow because he dies a lot. So if you hate Tom Cruise, you should watch this movie because he dies a lot in horrible ways.
Yes. Yeah.
So it should be really cathartic for you.
It should be, yeah. And yeah, his personal life aside, his movies are good movies. Right. So generally, you don't have to like the man to like to like the actor.
Tropic Thunder.
There you go.
Best role ever.
It was very different, that's for sure. When he was promoting this movie, he was supposed to go on Oprah with Spielberg to promote this movie, but Spielberg was already starting to shoot Munich at the time, so he had to bow out of doing the circuit on the promotion. And that wound up being the Infinites jumping on the couch.
Oh, this is when we found out Tom Cruise was crazy. He hit it well for years.
He's high on life.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, you don't have to like him as a person to enjoy him as an actor.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because, yeah, he's made a lot of movies that you love, and there's no denying that.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, well, now that we got that out of the way, we're going to be talking a lot more about Tom Cruise as we go. But before we get to that, we're going to talk more about the original here, because, I mean, I really love this film. I like both of them, but I certainly like the 53 a little bit more because of some of the innocence of it. They definitely try to grab more aspects from the radio version. There are certain nods there with the guy doing his best Orson Welles impression near the back end of the movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pulling some stuff from the radio play where once we get some information out and the UFOs have risen from the ground, all information stops, and that's straight out of the radio play. And I think it's out of the book as well, but I don't remember the book so well.
Well, the book radio wasn't as common either, right? So certainly there may have been elements. Like I said, I don't recall ever having read the book, which is unusual, being the reader that I am. But and I may have, but I don't remember reading it.
I did when I was a kid, but I'm very much like you. I don't remember it.
Yeah, and like I said, the book was written in 1897, so...
I'm not that old.
No, you're not. Right? No, you're not. So like I said, all the technology is available, even when they made this movie 50-some years later. Technology already advanced substantially from when Welles wrote his book.
Yeah, things have definitely going to change if you're going to modernize the story.
Yeah. But the one thing I really, really like about the original over the remake is the hopefulness in the original. There's all like there's no giving up. Like even at the end when they're all in that church, there's still hope there, right? They're still hoping that something's going to save them.
Let's talk about all that religious stuff.
Yeah, a lot of religious overtones in that one.
Yeah, and that's in the 1950s.
For an adaptation of a novel from a confessed atheist.
Yeah.
I think it's... that's very telling. But you're right. It was... religion had a much bigger place in society in the 50s. And that plays a big... And it might even now, I bet you a lot of people would find God real fast if we were under an alien invasion and hopefully find hope in companionship with each other.
Yes, absolutely. I suspect that that's would happen for a large number of people.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who are lapsed or have always questioned it. It's what I really liked about it was just even in those final moments where there seems to be no hope, there's still some hope. And I didn't get that from the remake.
I find the religious aspects overpower the science a lot of the times, despite the fact your lead character's a scientist.
Yeah.
Who doesn't do a lot of science.
Yeah, and I like the way that the remake kind of worked their way around some of the way the science works now. Like they know more about magnetics and electromagnetics and that stuff now than they did then.
The original film, let's just break this down. The original film is really about the global experience and how military and scientists are approaching this, and it's from a lot of different angles. The remake, the Spielberg version, is very much informed by a post 9/11 event, and it's a survivor's experience.
Yes, yeah, very much.
And
so.
you yes, you're seeing some of that stuff. You're seeing the military and doing its attacks. But you're always on the ground on the average person's level. You're never over the shoulder hearing a military plan or hearing scientists talk about it. You'll hear certain things come over the broadcast to kind of fine-tune things. But it really is the survivor's experience from the ground.
It is. And that's why it's definitely much faster paced than the original.
You don't even get any aerial shots.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
All on the ground.
It's all on the ground. You're absolutely right. But it's funny because the remake is almost 2 full hours versus the hour and 25 or 30.
It's an 85 minute movie.
But the original does feel longer because the pacing is so different.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a much slower paced film because about the global experience. I mean, it does focus on two characters more than anything else, but it is about how the world is responding.
Mm-hmm.
What you're trying to do to combat this invasion.
And those two characters very much represented science and faith.
Yes.
Yeah, with Clayton Forrester being the scientist and the really quickly convenient love interest in Sylvia Van Buren, the character. Anne Robinson, by the way, she originally played that role, but she wound up playing it again in the 1988 television series, the same character. I don't know if a lot of you saw it globally. There was a War of the Worlds television series. I think it lasted 2 seasons, but it was very Canadian, so I don't know if it ever got out of Canada. The first season's great. Second season, not so much. at least younger me remembers it being a pretty good show. Yeah. And then, of course, she wound up playing a cameo role, a different role, but in the remake. She's been in the War of the Worlds 3 times.
She is definitely attached to this in a way that nobody else is.
She's on our business cards.
Yes.
If you see our little corner box and there's a dude holding a girl, that's from War of the Worlds, guys. Yeah. That's the reference. I'm surprised nobody's ever picked up on that. But
maybe they have and just haven't said anything because, well, you guys don't talk to us very much.
You're starting to. That's good. I'm happy to see that.
Yeah,
If you're lonely, you have to talk to them.
It took us 3-4 years. Yeah. But
call your mother already, okay?
Have you been talking to my mother?
No.
Oh, okay.
I haven't even been talking to my own.
Oh.
She's doing fine, by the way.
Oh, okay, thanks, man.
No problem. Call her every day.
As long as someone's checking up on her, I'm good.
The 1953 movie, it's interesting to see how Spielberg approaches the aliens as opposed to the 53. They're still kind of clung in 1953 to the idea that life could exist on Mars, but science had progressed in such a way where we know that isn't true anymore. Yeah. So at least not any significant life anyway.
No, certainly.
I guess there's still lots of discoveries to be made, but nothing significant exists on that planet. So there's an ambiguity that I like about Steven Spielberg's movie, because it doesn't matter where they're from.
It doesn't really, no.
Where, you've got these meteors crashing into the ground and then kind of hatching these ships out of it. You've got, and it's a weird plan. In the remake, the ships have been laying dormant for probably millions of years. I'm surprised nobody stumbled upon one.
Yes.
Building a city and all.
Easily one of the biggest flaws in this film, actually.
And they're being activated by lightning storms and transporting their crew through this energy field, which means there's probably something big floating around up in space.
Which we never do see.
No, which we never do see. There's definitely some logic flaws, but because it's on the ground, I guess they're not important plot points. They should be.
Yes.
So, I mean, that is a bit flawed that they're planning to take over a planet. Well, why didn't you just inhabit it when there was nobody around?
Yeah,
before
exactly.
Before we got here, building ships.
Yeah. I guess
before we advanced as a technological race.
But I think I do have a thought process around it, because for the most part, our exploration of space is sending out machines first. So we send out probes and all sorts of things. We're always sending out machines before man travels further. So it does make a certain kind of sense that you would send the equipment out first.
It does, but millions of years?
Maybe it takes that long to travel for them. Yeah. I mean, if they're from light years away.
Well,
it could take a long, long time. And they're like, oh, fuck, this wasn't the way we left it.
Why are you logicking this movie?
Well, I knew you were going to attack me about it, so I thought I'd get ahead of it.
No, we're not attacking you. We're attacking this.
No, I knew Tyler was going to hop on me on that one. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. I do have science to back it up.
Or at least logic, certainly. It's flawed logic, but at least it's acceptable logic.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't even say it's flawed.
Oh, it's flawed. it's not that badly flawed. I will admit, but there's it's.
What are you talking about? I'm perfect.
Ask
you
Elon
lost
Musk.
The Oscars.
Yeah, no, I lost on purpose.
Yeah.
If I would have taken the two Pixar movies, the best song and the best picture, I would have won that fucker. I would have gone with my head instead of my gut. I would have won.
Instead of your head instead of your heart, you mean?
Oh, yeah. By the way, I think I forgot to mention what Trish got. Maybe I should wait until she's back on the show. It wasn't good.
No, you know what? I don't think we need to tell anybody what Trish got. I think that's...
I'll let her tell it.
Yes.
I don't even think she knows yet.
Yeah. Personally, I think that's funnier. What she got is funnier than what I got.
No, it's equally funny.
Yeah, it is equally funny.
She's had better Oscars, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It was all hard for her.
It was. It genuinely was. Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. All right, well, you told me yesterday on a text to mention video cameras.
And freaked your ass out. It was so funny.
Yeah, I'm like, don't bring video cameras. This is an audio podcast, and I never want to be shown on camera.
Yeah,
very
no.
uncomfortable.
And that's why I phrased it the way I did.
Piss me off.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And I'm like, why do you want a video camera? Tell me your idea so I can tell you if it's good or not.
Yeah. And he should have known better.
I did know better, but...
But you don't trust me sometimes, and I get that. I deserve that distrust.
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. you've burned me a few times.
Yeah, so
we've known you long enough.
I'm like, okay, where's the rib coming from?
Yeah, no, it was just something I observed. And
I thought you might have been building like a GIF or something.
Yeah, no, I would not do that to us because, well, none of us want to be on camera.
There you go.
Yeah, so, and I'll respect that. I definitely respect that.
We all have voices for radio.
Yes. We have faces for radio too.
No, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
Speak for yourself.
But... Yeah, there's a scene in the remake that really, and I spotted it like right away. Okay, so right after the lightning storm and this alien's dropping down to the ship, they're all around where the earthquake is about to start happening, and nothing's working. Watches are stopped, cars are stopped, clocks are stopped. There's no power, and there's a guy using a fucking video camera. And I'm dropping.
How did I not pick up on that? It wasn't even the scene I thought you were talking about.
I know, but it's right in the first 25 minutes of the movie. Yeah. There's this guy walking around there, and they actually show his screen as one of the shots. He's like behind him, and they're showing him filming the landing spot.
Ah, but if it was all powered down and nothing was turned on, then that thing would still be functional. So there is a bit of a, you can go with
it's kind
it.
Of a gray area, but it still pissed me area. Off.
And that's something I liked, because the EMP, despite them not really having a full-on word for it in 1953, they do talk about that.
Yes, they do.
They talk about the technology shutting down, and they do call it an electromagnetic event of some sorts. I mean, at that in 1953, they'd know, because they'd been doing nuclear testing for a few years, so they know.
Yeah.
The certain results of that, so I guess they would know what an EMP pulse was.
Yeah, they just may not have had that
the
particular
language.
Term for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, they definitely talk about it, and I like that. And I like one of the things I liked is they call it an umbrella or something like that. It's for the shields.
The blister.
The blister.
Oh, they called it an umbrella and a blister.
Yeah.
So you're both right. Because I really liked it when they called it a blister.
Yeah,
so I'm like, yeah, it's great for a toy. Like, I just automatically think blister pack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I love that in the remake, they use that same look.
Yeah, around the tripods.
Yeah, and with the sort of cylindrical shield with the conical top. I loved it.
That's one thing I love about Spielberg's remake is he went back to the tripods of the book, because I think it's such a neat look, and they worked really hard on trying to give it a unique movement and feel somewhat organic in the way it moves, almost elegant, like a giraffe.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, there's a scene there that rather visually disturbing scene where it seems like the ship is partially organic.
Yeah, yeah, when they're plucking people out of the cage into the sphincter.
Yes.
The sphincter of doom. Yeah. Yeah. The blood sphincter. Oh, the bloody orifice of doom.
Hell's asshole.
We just came up with like 6 t-shirts right there.
Yes.
Hell's asshole, the bloody sphincter of doom.
Yes.
That is a movie that needs to be on a movie marquee right now. Yeah. Like, that's a movie. Hell's sphincter, the bloody asshole of doom.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's awesome. Thanks, Tyler.
That's where I just go through that scene where they're pulling Tom Cruise out the asshole.
Leaves the grenades behind in an explosive diarrhea moment. Ah, shit.
Yes. You should have a little bit of editing to do around here there, Jay.
No, I believe in all that fucking...
No, yeah. We just have to wait for Tyler to compose himself.
I'm sorry, I'm not usually this bad, but just...
I'm now just now doing to take him on.
Now we know that Tom Cruise really is a piece of shit. Spielberg knew it.
Yeah, allegedly. That was their second movie together, but that was also the one that they parted ways on.
Yeah, I could see how that might happen.
I think it's one of his stiffest performances. And for whatever flaws the remake might have, I think a lot of it lies in Tom Cruise's performance.
Yeah.
Because you don't buy him that subdued and shitty dad, you know. Everybody just kind of likes him.
You know? He typically does play likable more than unlikable. So yeah, I mean
story-wise, it's written well. Like and I think it's a little personal with Spielberg having an absentee father as well.
Yeah.
So the story of this dad who doesn't really become a dad until the kind of things have gone to shit with the world around him, and has to protect his family.
Yeah, there's one of my big issues with this movie is, and I've never liked movies that do this, where there's just this futility about it. All the way through it, it's like one traumatic event after another traumatic event after another traumatic event, and it gets tired from
it. But it does have that, and maybe some people think it's trite at this point, I've always loved this about Spielberg, that hopeful ending. Which, you know, he gets criticized for because it's in the book. I hate to tell you guys, it's in the fucking book. You know, the character does get reunited with his family against all odds.
Yeah, and you know, and you expect that, right? And certainly, especially from a Spielberg film.
Yeah.
But this is one of the few movies where I didn't feel that hope until
right, and you feel hopeful a lot of the times in the original. Where this one, there's almost a futility of trying to survive all the time.
There is, yeah, and I mean, and
sometimes giving up on that stubbornness, like having to give up on the vehicle to save your family.
Yes, yeah. which is a traumatic scene.
It is. I mean, there is some dark shit in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably darker stuff that even got pulled out, because when I was doing some reading about this, there was some stuff that they pulled out just to make it the PG-13 that it is.
I could see that. I think maybe some of the more graphic elements of this. Mm-hmm. And there's that scene, that first scene after the ship comes out of the earth and it starts cremating everybody. Mm-hmm. And Tom Cruise is in there covered in human ashes, and that's probably one of the strongest moments I've ever seen Tom Cruise on scene, actually. That shock and the fear. He was so good in that moment, and I
you had lots to pull from, because that was the exact same face you'd see on First Responders at 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah.
Covered in the ash of the building and the people who were dying in it.
Yeah. And,
and that realization of what you're covered in.
Yeah, and that scene, out of all the scenes in this movie, is the one that affected me the most.
And you got to give him credit for that, because he's it's absolutely traumatic.
It is. Like, you can feel how stunned he is by what's occurred, and realizing what he's covered in, especially that scene in the mirror where he starts to wash it off and shake it out of his hair. It's like, wow, that is... That's Spielberg, right? Yeah. And pulling the best performance out of Tom.
Yeah, his awkward panic moments aren't so good. You know, let's steal the sandwiches out. I'm like, you just went to your kids, the other half of the parents' place. They're loaded with food. Just turn on the stove.
Yeah, they're all going away for 2 days. It's not like they emptied up the fridge.
That's right. And all you can find is bread.
Yeah, that scene really pissed me off, actually.
It did. It's awkward, and if there was anything that needed to be edited out. Because
it was just poorly done.
Yeah, and you need to see that him trying to compose himself to kind of calm down his kids, that he's failing miserably.
Well, because it shows how little he knows his kids, right? Like that was the point of that scene, was not just to show him sort of panicking, but also how little he knows about his own kids.
Yeah.
Right? And that was, and that scene needed to happen, but not that one.
Yeah.
Right? Like that, it needed to be different.
By the way, Dakota Fanning won an award for this at the MTV Movie Awards. Do you know what it was?
Most annoying character?
No, I love Dakota Fanning.
So do I.
Person you most don't want to have with you during an apocalypse.
And it was something semi-negative like that. Right? I just had this feeling. Right? Dakota Fanning.
It's weird because sometimes she seems the most level-headed character in the movie, and then other times, like, the true kid is doing it, but she was always seemed so more grown up than her age.
Yes.
Yeah.
In everything she was in, because this wasn't the only Spielberg alien invasion thing she was in. I think she was in Taken as well, the TV event series.
Oh, but she is becoming a favorite, especially then she was a favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody wanted to work with her.
Yeah.
Because, she was so accomplished at such a young age.
Yeah.
I mean, her performances were always as strong as, if not better than most of the adults.
Yeah, and I mean, we're now... She's got to kind of reinvent herself now that she's in her early 20s, but it's still short.
Yeah.
But, you know, she's still out there working and getting some good roles. And, I mean, she was in the Twilight saga. I guess it's just...
Good roles? Sorry?
Well, I mean, but Twilight? It's a big movie for her, right? Yeah. So she's still getting big parts, even if they're in shitty movies.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I was watching the remake last night, and Val came in and she says... Oh, she really sucked in Twilight.
So did everybody else, Val.
And that's what I said. I said, you know what? Sometimes it doesn't matter how good the actor is. When you have a shitty script and a shitty director, you can't do anything with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Trust me, she was better than that script when she was like 8.
Yes.
No, well, I don't know. The Twilight books were very good.
You didn't read them.
No, I didn't read them.
Please. All right, with that, I'm going to run the 2005 trailer to get us back on track through Tyler's terrible, terrible lies. And we will talk more War of the Worlds.
I need you back in 4 instead of 12. I got half a career coming in.
I can't.
You know what your problem is?
I can think of a couple of women be happy to tell you.
8:30?
We said 8 o'clock.
Hello, Dad.
Hello, Rachel.
We'll be back by 9:30 on Sunday.
Mom says you got a report due on Monday.
What do you know, right?
Everything.
Rachel, want to see something cool?
He hid right behind our house.
Lightning doesn't strike twice.
You believe this, Ray? Every single car.
Oh, I've never seen that many strikes of lightning in one spot.
Hear that?
There's something down there, and it's moving.
Get in, Manny, or you're gonna die.
Okay, Tyler, you look like you have a question.
I got a question. I do. When Tom Cruise gets pulled out of the asshole, why is he spitting out the grenade pins?
Well, okay, he's got one arm in the sphincter and one arm on the other side of the sphincter, so the one in is holding the grenades. He's still got to pull the pin somehow.
Well, with the one arm that is holding the grenades, you put your finger in the pin of the grenade and you pull. The grenades are going up into the asshole. I'm assuming he
couldn't see much.
Well, probably not. But why would you put that shit in your mouth? And then why are you waiting until after you've been shat out and on the ground there and then spit them out in your hand?
Because they needed that visual moment to allow the military guy to go, everybody down.
Yeah.
You got to do something that just looks cool.
Like shitting out of Tom Cruise.
Yeah. No, you're right. It is a really poor excuse for a scene, but it's necessary to give that warning to everybody else. That was the only reason it was there, is so that everybody could get the warning so they didn't get blown up. Instead, they get dropped from a couple hundred feet to the ground onto a tree.
Way to that protect your kid.
Yes. Yeah.
Good job, buddy.
Yeah. Good
but
job.
He does take out one of the ships.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know, one of the only average citizen, which is funny because after Robbie, his son, they're constantly at odds. Like this is a broken family, and you could tell they don't like being with dad because he's the absentee father who obviously doesn't take much consideration for his kids.
No, they established that really in the movie when he goes to bed. They get there, he goes to bed and says, "Order in."
Yeah, and Robbie's got a lot of anger in him, and he's channeling this towards the invasion and wants to fight.
Yeah,
I can see where that would be a reaction, one of many that people would have. Some flee away from it, some will flee towards it. You know, we've got to see this.
I personally think they should have left Robbie dead.
From more a traumatic thing, but, you know, they were trying to tell a story that was a little more accurate to the novel, and it does have that ending. So,
yeah.
I there's a whole Robbie's story, like what happens after he goes charging up that hill and the hill goes ablaze, and how does he survive all that? So there's a whole survivor story that we don't even get to see.
And I would have liked to have seen some of that because that was one of the things that kind of irked me, is how did he get there before Tom and Dakota?
Well, he didn't spend 3 days in a basement with Tim Robbins.
Well, there's that, yes. Yeah. But I mean, how did he survive that explosion, and how did he get to from point A to point B,
mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it certainly would have made an already long movie longer, but it was a hole for me, right? Is all of a sudden Robbie's just there?
Yeah, yep. I mean, and that's a case of too much story to tell.
Yeah,
I mean, you could have thrown another half hour, or at least made it a short film on the DVD. It would have been cool.
Yeah, that would have been cool. Yeah, as a DVD extra or something like that. But maybe cut down some other scenes to give us that 5 minutes, mm-hmm. to sort of show Robbie's journey.
That's the thing. They never wanted to break away from Tom Cruise's back. The camera follows him around. Yeah. There's some amazing camera work on this, by the way.
Oh, yeah. It's stunning.
That initially when they take that van.
Yeah.
It's so cool when there's the panic conversation happening in and out. So this camera, it's one big tracking shot, and it's one of many big tracking shots. So there's some long lingering shots, which are very classic filmmaking. I love them. Every time you get a nice long tracking shot, I'm like, ooh, I get giddy about them. This is a moving in traffic scene, and the camera swing into the car as there's like panic conversation and trying to calm down the daughter, and then the camera sways back out slightly above the car, and it'll swing in the front window or around the driver's side, and it's just incredible. It's so cool. So cool. There's a lot of digital trickery happening there because I'm sure there are actual cuts happening, but it looks like one big tracking shot, and it's really amazing.
If there were cuts, they did it really well.
Yeah. If you've watched the Daredevil television series and everybody loves that big hallway fight, mm-hmm. and they think it's one big tracking shot, and I'm like, there's your cut. I can see where they've done it because the camera's swaying into a wall.
Yeah.
they didn't lift that wall. That's gone to black for a second. There's your cut as it's swinging around. So it's clever, and there's lots of great ways to hide a cut. But boy, however they did it, I didn't see it. I didn't catch it in War of the Worlds.
Neither did I.
That speaks to how masterful this still unknown filmmaker Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
That's what I'd actually like to see, like a 5-minute documentary on the DVD on is how they did that shot.
Yeah, the only documentary that was on the DVD I have, and maybe the subsequent releases are more robust, was basically about the tripods and the alien designs, and still working that theme of three that they had in the original film.
Yeah, which is also what I believe it's in the Wells novel as well, is that?
Yeah.
Because it makes them different from humans.
I like when the aliens come down in the basement while they're hiding, and then they spin the bicycle wheel and just kind of investigating the junk. But it's almost like a society that advanced so far but never invented the wheel.
Yeah.
At the same time, they're almost like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. There is a certain they're very interested in it.
Yeah.
A curiosity, like almost childlike.
Yeah. It's just this amazing, like, what is this amazing invention?
Yeah.
What does this do? What's the purpose of this round thing? It's really incredible to behold. I'm like, that's really clever. An advanced society that never invented the wheel. You can't even imagine it, but at the same time, what would it like? You develop things that walk instead of roll and are less efficient, so you need these big wiry legs to maneuver over complicated terrains.
Yeah, and that explains why they're so advanced. It's like they skipped over an evolutionary step.
Yeah.
Right? Which is kind of interesting to consider.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, I mean, everything's kind of designed around their three-limbed bodies as well. In the remake, they are pulling something else from the novel that the original movie didn't do, which is the red weeds.
Yes.
And that was another plot hole that kind of bugs me about the movie, is when the tripods first come out, they're just rampantly blowing everybody away. If you were going to use the people as a resource for fertilizing and terraforming this to something a little more familiar, then why are you blowing your resources away?
Well, that I think I can come up with some flawed logic.
Granted, I guess there are plenty of us.
Well, that, and I think part of it too is they had to establish control first, right?
They needed a beachhead.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. That makes sense. Yeah, when they're first rising, they you're right. They got to establish their dominance early before they can start working on secondary things.
They start hurting people. If you see, they're actually hurting people into one location, so they can start grabbing them.
Yeah, as the tripods start coming together with a little more stratagem. Yeah, you're right. They are hurting them, and we do see that after the ferry collapses and they come up on the beachhead, and they are being herded in a certain direction, and very deliberately.
Yeah,
that's another scene that pissed me off was the ferry scene. You got the National Guard there trying to save people. Why the fuck were there cars on that ferry?
That bothered me. Too. Why they didn't even think about pushing them off until like right at the last minute when they weren't letting more people on.
And there are people in them.
There
were people in the cars when it was when they went over.
Oh, that just shows the panic and selfishness of humans in some of those times. That's definitely, as Sam was speaking of how hopeful and everybody comes together in the original movie. It's almost like. And I read something like that Spielberg wanted to have stuff like that, and it's almost like David Coop kept writing against that.
Well, because the truth is this movie's probably more accurate to the way people behave in our current society.
There's looting. There's looting
in the murder. Original. And murder in the original.
Yeah, that's true.
But this really highlights how shitty people really are to each other when it comes down to.
I mean, people getting trampled in the crowds, which, fuck, that happens on Black Friday.
Yes,
when there isn't any panic.
That's true, right?
I'm like, guys, you don't need to kill each other over a PS4 VR set or whatever the fuck you did this year. Come on, nothing's that important.
No, but this is actually, like I said, it's a far more accurate representation as to how people would behave in this type of incident.
Yeah.
Yeah, some cities riot when their favorite hockey team wins.
At least you'd think. But you know what? When you go back, you reference the fact that this is a post-9/11 film, and you see how Americans came together during that event.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that this is an accurate representation now that I think about it, because Americans, say what you want about the American public, when their country is threatened or damaged, they get together and they stand side by side, regardless of any other feelings they might have about each other.
And I think both things were happening, because it's happening on a global scale. Panic happens, and people react differently with different stimuli. Sometimes badness, as we saw with Tim Robbins.
Yes.
And other times just through selfish survival. And for very genuine things, we don't know the story of the guy who held the gun on Ray in the movie to steal the van. We don't know his story, and maybe he needed to get to his family.
Yeah, everybody has their own motivations. Absolutely. Yeah,
we don't know what that story is. Yeah. It comes off selfish on film, but there's a whole story we don't know. And then in the end, that guy died for it.
Yeah, well, there's that too, right?
It enraged a crowd.
Yeah, and that's certainly a good example of how people can join together
can cause chaos. But we see a little bit more of that something with the ferry. Yeah, there's panic, but everybody's trying to help each other on board when the military isn't letting them on board.
Yes,
so everybody's trying to come together to help each other to save each other. You know, they didn't want other people dying around them.
They don't want anyone left behind.
We see Robbie trying his damnedest to help people on board.
Yeah, and that was another really powerful moment in the film.
So, for every negative, there's a positive happening in that movie, which makes, I think, at least the survivor experience at least somewhat realistic.
It may be to a certain extent. It's tough to balance that, and I have to admit that that's a really tough thing to balance. But like I said, but referencing back, as you said, to the 9/11, seeing how that country in particular, and I have no strong feelings one way or the other about Americans. I'm not trying to hack on them, but certainly that event really showed how strong the American people are and how they can join together in times of strife.
Absolutely.
While it was a terrible moment for Americans, it's also a shining moment in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have liked to see maybe a little bit more of that in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to reference 9/11 or at least use that to inform how you tell your story, there wasn't a lot of that hopefulness along the way.
That was probably my biggest complaint about this movie. While I did enjoy it, I already said it earlier, but I'm going to say it again, that was the one thing I found missing from this movie versus the original.
Yeah. And maybe there should have been more of that, but could have been Spielberg intentionally trying to sway away from that, because it's always his biggest criticism as well.
And that's a tough one, because this movie needs that.
That he's got a soft spot and he's overly sentimental. Yeah. But that's always been my favorite part about his movies.
That's right.
The sentimentality.
Yeah. And I think the biggest challenge that Spielberg had was changing the character so much. I mean, because Ray is a laborer. Mm-hmm. Right, he's a very talented laborer, but a laborer nonetheless. Right, he's right.
So. Ironic when his first scene, we first see him. We see him at his job in this giant crane. It's very tripod-like.
Yes,
lifting these big things onto big canisters onto trains.
The shipping containers.
Yeah. There's something there.
Yeah. Well, there is, and I thought back to it as I was watching the movie. I'm like, there's an irony there. Yeah. There certainly is an irony there. Yeah. And he's very good at his job. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they make that clear in that opening scene.
And he's also not willing to put in extra hours. He's a little bit of a dick. Union rules.
Yeah.
I don't think he likes his job very much.
Well, I know. I don't think it's that he doesn't like it. But he also had his kids coming, and he could have just said, I've got my kids and the union rules. I'm on the union rules. But they're trying to establish the fact that he's very selfish.
Yeah.
Right. And he is. He makes it very clear. They want to make sure that he's very, very selfish. And I'm glad that they changed his character from a scientist to somebody who is maybe a little more physical, because one thing I will never buy Tom Cruise as is a scientist.
Well, there you go. The Mummy.
which I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, don't bother.
Yeah, no, skip it.
Yeah, skip it, definitely.
So I would write in saying that you'll never buy Tom Cruise as a scientist.
No, but I mean, and I get that, because for the average person, you want somebody more familiar, because you can relate to them, a laborer more than a scientist. The average person can't relate to a scientist,
which is true.
Can to a laborer or construction worker or just somebody who works at
An everyman. Yeah, and certainly, yeah, in the original, back in the 50s, they really loved having their scientists in their science fiction movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was a very common trope in those 50s movies.
Yeah.
Is you have your lead character is a scientist or a man of science, or at least has a very strong understanding of science.
You know what I found funny about the original there, where the love interest, she had her master's degree, but the only time we saw her actually doing anything with the scientists and all that was when she served them coffee and donuts.
Yeah, and when she was volunteering with the Red Cross, you know, that is
a big flaw in that movie.
Because women in society in the 50s, I suppose, you're not supposed to see them in a smart, superior role coming up with solutions. And it's a shame, because that's exactly the position that character should have been in.
That's true, yes.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though. The biologist was a woman, and they actually deferred to her.
That's true. So why didn't they do that with this other smart lady?
Why wasn't she involved with trying to figure this shit out, right?
Yeah.
No, why is she just serving coffee and donuts?
Yeah, and it would have made, I just added to that juxtaposition of science versus religion, and you have a character who represents that so clearly.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. She is a scientist and she's got faith.
Yeah.
And, it could have worked really, really well in their favor.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But again, like you said, in the 50s, I mean, female characters, as a rule, especially the female leads, they weren't there to be smart. They were there to be pretty,
mm-hmm.
right? Unfortunately. But they did give her that master's and then wasted it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, if I can go back and tell those producers, like, hey, you need to push this forward. Nobody will buy it. Yeah, they will, because trust me, in another 60 years, it'll be relevant.
Yeah, yeah, it'll make a movie that's already a classic even more of a classic, because it would have been ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the farmhouse scene, because it's the one that bears a lot of resemblance in both movies.
Yes, yeah. That one, there's direct parallels for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Where there's a lot more going on because of Tim Robbins and the terrible necessity that Tom Cruise's Ray has to make to save his daughter, despite the fact that she runs and gets kidnapped from taken anyway, leading to the sphincter scene.
Yes.
Sorry, Tyler. I, every time I say that, it's just going to fire.
I am so using that as one of our images when we do our teasers and stuff.
Okay.
We might get in trouble for it, but I'm going to do it.
That's fine.
Tom Cruise is a piece of shit is always going to make me laugh now.
So, but the importance of that scene is Tim Robbins, in a lot of ways, is replacing Robbie, who's now run off, to be that counterpoint we need to fight. Yeah. As opposed to, like, I just need to protect my 9-year-old daughter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not a case of Tom not wanting to fight. It's having different priorities.
Yes. Right. And his priority is protect his child.
Yeah. And he would have never gone in that basement if he knew he was getting recruited.
Yeah. And there's that really fucking creepy scene where Tim Robbins is talking to Dakota Fanning's character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't worry if your father dies. I'll take care of you.
Yeah. It was so creepy. Like, I actually felt my skin crawl.
No,
yeah.
that just shows how good of an actor Tim Robbins really is, because he did creep me out right from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, he's only got one big scene, but boy, he stands out in it the whole time.
Yeah,
remarkable performance, actually.
Yeah.
But, you know, that badge, that choice is as Tim Robbins is panicking, Ogilvy's panicking, and Tom Cruise realizes he has to make this terrible decision. And it's one of the few deaths we see, a very intentional death. Oh, we don't actually see it on camera. Yeah, and that's actually the power of that moment, too. Because you don't need to see what's happening, because you know what's happening.
Yeah, they don't even show his body.
And while Dakota Fanning is chanting this lullaby to kind of cover up the noises.
Oh, yeah, those scenes are,
Spielberg manipulates the audience in that movie sometimes.
Oh, there's no question that this man is a master filmmaker, even though nobody knows who he is.
Yeah, one day.
Yeah, one day.
I'll have to check out some of his other movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, that setting.
There's one that's actually well regarded with kids of the 80s like us. It was called Et.
Et?
Yeah. It's spelled E-T. It's Et.
What kind of fucking name is that?
I don't know. That's why his movies never take off. Just terrible names.
Yeah.
Terrible. But yeah, the basement scene, and I think one of the reasons that it works so well is because, unlike the rest of the movie, it's in a small enclosed space,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's the environment itself creates part of the tension, mm-hmm. right? And it's a creepy fucking basement.
Yeah, it's not that small either.
No, it's not. Like,
it's fucking gigantic. But I love how that scene works because they actually filmed. I read about that scene because the way they're coming down that hill and gets invited into the basement, that actual farmhouse did have a hatch into the basement, but it was on the wrong side of the house. So they built a new one and had to dig into the ground, so it looks like they're going in, and then that basement is all stage set after that.
But it's so, a great
there
set.
There you go, movie magic blown.
Yeah, but I love the fact that of all the scenes, that like what makes it so powerful is that fact that they're trapped in this space.
It's a creepy basement. It reminded me of Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah,
for some reason,
it's dark and it's stank and it's tinted by the red of the red weeds.
Yeah.
So there's a reddish hue to what's down there, that kind of it almost is a precursor to the red weeds because of the tone of the lighting in there.
Yeah, no, it's
but it directly parallels the original film with the probe that comes in, the Cobra probe that comes in, and including chopping the cobra head off with the axe.
Spielberg definitely and the writers of the remake obviously wanted to make sure that they had some very distinct homages to some of the classic scenes from that movie.
Right down to when the aliens succumb to the bacteria and biology of the planet, the microorganisms, is we see that hand coming out of the hatch, just going limp. And man, I was really impressed at how that looked in 53 with the pulsing in the arm, where it's more of a special effect in 2005. It's like, wow, you guys had to do that all practically. And you can see the veins and kind of it's collapsing as whatever is flowing through its blood is just stops flowing. It works really well.
It does work very, very well.
Yeah, I actually think I like the 53 arm better than
I think I do too. I think I do too.
But we've already discussed the fact that we're all fans of practical effects.
Sure.
Over CGI. I mean, no offense against CGI, but it has its place. But when you're dealing with something that should look real, practical effects always seem to feel more real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they only, and that's the only scene, again, you get to see the aliens, much like the original barnyard scene. It's enough. They're very interesting looking, but
I think we just saw too much of them.
I would have kept it a little bit more in shadow, but I would have said the same with the original too. I would have shadowed a little bit more, if nothing else, to hide the flaws of the actual
looking like
constructing
a Muppet.
Construction of it. Overall, I mean, I think that it's a huge accomplishment for what they did in the 50s.
For sure, I mean, certainly it's...
And even 13-year-old special effects for Spielberg's are still stand up pretty good, gotta say.
Yeah, they do still stand up pretty good,
Still looks better than some of the stuff we're seeing today.
Yeah, well, it's again, it's a testament to that budget that they had.
Well, I guess he knows a couple of guys over Industrial Light and Magic.
Industrial
Light and Magic. What's that?
I don't know. It's founded by some guy, Lucas George. No, George Lucas.
George Lucas.
I nothing ever happened with him either.
Yeah, no.
Oh, okay.
He did. He made some THX movie, and that was it.
That's it?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, and there's something called American Graffiti. Isn't that him?
Yeah, that was him too. Yeah. I guess they worked together. Some guy named after a state.
Dakota.
Johnson.
That's it.
Dakota Johnson.
Dakota Johnson, yeah.
Wait.
Those are shitty movies too, I think, weren't they?
That's not right.
No.
Indiana?
Indiana?
I might be Indiana.
Indiana Johnson?
Jones, I think.
Jones?
Yeah. I don't know.
Nothing ever happened with that series.
Go check them out. I don't know. Let me know what they're like. Never saw
You know what would be really good? Is if they could like take this movie with the aliens and put it with that, what did you say, Indiana Jones?
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Put them together.
Aliens and what was that movie about? An archaeologist?
Yeah, he's like an archaeologist or something.
That's
like that.
A terrible idea. Nobody would see that.
I think
that would
be a wonderful
Nobody's
movie.
Ever going to like that.
That would be a wonderful movie.
Well,
maybe some crystal skulls thrown in there to really.
That would be awesome.
That's so cool.
We need to get together and write this.
Yeah. You know what? Because nuclear age guys, just envision this. Some dude survives hiding in a refrigerator. Because everything was made out of lead back then.
Oh, yeah. No, that totally makes sense.
Right?
We can make that like our opening scene.
That'd be really cool.
That'd be awesome.
Nothing's ever going to go wrong with that.
No. Everybody will love it.
That sounds like a hit to me.
Yeah. That Oscar winner. All
right. Just, yeah, slap an Oscar on it right now.
We'll fucking write this right after we're done the podcast.
I didn't know I was going to have to do that much work.
Well, you know, when you have a genius idea, you gotta jump on it
right away. Yep.
Okay, any of your favorite scenes that you guys have that you want to talk about?
And we already talked about my favorite scene with the at the beginning of the movie. There, it's by far the best scene in the movie for me. It's just on a whole.
Both of them are great openers, yeah. I think, for both films, and they're very similar in their approach. Just one's has more of a city setting.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's a quaint looking city. I don't know where they shot that, but
somewhere in New Jersey. It was, okay,
because Grover Mill was the original radio play was set in New Jersey, yeah. And I don't know, but if I was aliens, New Jersey was the last place I'd go.
Just the pollution there would kill him.
Yeah.
Well, no wonder it does. And it does. Yeah.
I mean, there's one thing that I wanted to talk about, and that's kind of understated in both films. I like the irony of it. Kudos to Wells for using this device of them being killed by Earth bacteria, because the parallels to what happened to the Native Americans when Europeans brought bacteria to the United States, right? I mean, it's interesting how
you'd figure an advanced society would be prepared for that.
You'd think, right? But at the same time, I like the parallel that it has to the invasion of the Europeans of the United States. But it happens in reverse, right?
And they do talk about the narration, the moment they stepped outside, breathed our air, and drank our water.
Yeah.
And we actually see that happen in the remake.
Yes.
We actually see them drinking from the pipes and breathing our air. So.
But I liked that parallel because it does reference back to American history so clearly.
Yeah.
I think it kind of more references now.
In some ways, yeah.
Because, you know, we've lived with these viruses and bugs for thousands of years, and now with our technology, with our antibiotics and all that, getting a shot for this, like, got a cold, give me a shot and all that, we create super viruses now, right?
So there's definitely there's some modern parallels as well, yeah.
So these aliens were so advanced that they eliminated all their viruses by, you know, their antibiotics and stuff like that, so they can't even deal with, you know, a cold.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's certainly a really great extrapolation from the whole concept as well.
Not that I'm against vaccines.
No.
No, vaccines are good. Just, hey, if you got a cold, you don't need a pill.
No.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, it still is a great parallel to the forming of that of the nation of America.
Yeah, right? You're right.
Right? Because
that probably was the...
That was certainly Wells' intent.
Yeah.
Is to draw that parallel. And possibly even in 1953, there was some sort of... There was some intent there. I think... Possibly in 2005, I think Tyler's probably closer to right that it is a parable.
Well,
for
I mean, if you think about what these stories tell, as you said, I think that is was a story about colonization,
yeah.
And in a fantasy parallel to that in the initial intent. Whereas the 53, I think, was making more of a statement about war,
yeah.
And specifically the nuclear age as well. Nuclear threat, because they throw a nuke at it and nothing happens, and that was what they think is the be-all and end-all.
Well, and you'd think that it would be because of the EMP, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd think that EMP would have at least done something. And that actually did bug me about the original.
These things were causing their EMP, so their technology is already shielded from what they're causing.
That's true. So, yeah, they're already generating them, but I mean, the whole idea is that they're supposed to be unbeatable until the bacteria gets to them, and
did an alien fall on the shield controls? Why would that suddenly affect the ships themselves? Unless the ships, as we said, the ships do have sphincters, so maybe they are at least biological.
Yeah.
Well, even at the end there, when the hatch opened,
all this fluid
comes out. Orange goo or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So and when, it's and, almost an ambiotic fluid of some sort.
Yeah.
You know, could be some kind of symbiotic relationship between pilot and ship.
Yeah. But yeah, certainly, yeah, there's lots to indicate that at least in the remake, they're at least partially organic. Because, yeah, there's the sphincter, and then when that blows up, it blows up and there's all that goo, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and there's actual flesh that comes off of it as well. So you know, it was a very disgusting visual, and it worked really well.
Well, they also got tanks of human blood. Yeah. So. That they're mixing in with their fertilizer.
and that was definitely. I mean, definitely Spielberg's version didn't shy away from much.
No, and yeah, as I said, the Spielberg's definitely a survivor story.
Yeah,
it's very much a response to 9/11. I think in the way he tells that story.
Yeah, and that's the thing is if it weren't for those few moments where they come across the military, I think that the War of the Worlds would have been a misnomer for this movie because it really wasn't a War of the Worlds movie. It was a guy running from aliens movie.
No, it was just another Tom Cruise running away from explosions movie. Yeah. That's what it was.
As Sam said, Sam sent me a text and he's right. Tom Cruise is one of the best runners in cinema today.
Yes. He is. Especially when he's running from explosions. Yeah. That's why I compare
He's got a great film run.
Yeah, he's got a great film run. He's really, really good at it.
This is why I called this movie Mission Impossible with aliens. Just because of the running away from the explosions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's there. And like I said, it was only like 10 minutes in the film, and I'm like, I got to text Jay.
Yeah.
I had just come back from Tomb Raider. Yes, I saw that last night. And I got to say, Alicia Vikander's got very much a great cinematic run. And she is shredded. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
She did all her own stunts, and it opens with her doing some MMA fighting, so establishes her fighting prowess. And she's just fucking ripped.
I played the game. I don't need to see the movie.
Yeah, I played the game, but it actually helps you enjoy the movie. Because every time there was a scene that was straight from the game, I reflexively started hitting square.
Well, it's all I saw in the trailers. I'm watching the trailers, I'm going, saw that in the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for a game that probably took me 2 weeks to play, it's 2 hours on film, and... Yeah, if anything, there's just not enough stuff going on for me. Like, there's certain things that film does really, really well, and other things it's like, that's kind of middling. So I can understand where there's kind of middle-of-the-road reviews. I enjoyed it. I think we're going to see, I hope we'll see more of Alicia Vikander and maybe some better script writing along the way, but it's actually better than the Angelina Jolie movies. It's certainly no Dakota Johnson.
Yeah, that faint praise. That's pretty faint praise there, Jay. But yeah, I'm hoping
the Nathan Drake Uncharted movie will maybe be that video game movie that finally does it right.
You know what? It could be Rampage. It could be Rampage. It could be the video game movie.
Wouldn't that be great? Rampage is the video game movie.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't it, though?
After we're done...
I've seen the trailer. I don't know.
After we're done, the archaeologist...
Dakota Johnson?
Yeah. After we're done writing that script, we're writing the Rampage script.
No, it stars The Rock. It's...
Are you kidding me? They're actually
picking
that?
No, that's an actual thing.
It's an actual movie.
I'll show you the trailer after we're done here.
Holy shit. They'll fucking make anything into a movie.
You
thought we were doing a bit.
Jesus. And I saw an ad for another Rock movie. I'm like, how many fucking movies did he do this year?
I don't know. I don't know where this guy sleeps. Because he's in good shape.
He's got the Tower coming out.
Yeah.
And I saw a trailer for that. And then Rampage is out. We just got through Jumanji. Like, and I don't know. There could be five more yet.
Well, and he has a TV series that he produces. And
that's right. And he's actually was producing one based on Paige from the WWE.
Yeah.
A movie there. I'm like, and I think he appears in it briefly as well as himself.
Of course.
Of course.
No,
who's going to play The Rock but The Rock?
I think somebody figured out that The Rock has the perfect genetic code, and they just cloned him. There's actually 9 Rocks out there.
There might be.
There's got to be.
It's the only explanation. Cause
either that or the guy's doing a shitload of speed and coke.
I don't know how he fucking does it, man.
No, I don't either, because I was questioning that a couple years ago, because he had like three movies coming out, like boom, boom, boom. I'm like, when does this guy get
I would like sleep? Just a tenth of that work ethic and that energy to do all that.
Yeah, because I mean, the guy works out 4 hours a day on top of everything.
Like,
yeah, man, I work out 2 hours a day and I fucking... I still don't got enough time in the day to do the shit I gotta do.
Yeah, I mean, it's normal people. They can't do it all. How do you do all this? I mean, he must, like, have the scripts in front of him being recited to him or something. Or I don't... I have no idea how he gets through
it all. He's inhuman. I mean...
Yeah, he is inhuman. He's a fucking android, man. So they just upload the scripts. Just automatically knows this shit.
Well, that'll explain that perfect physique.
Yes. And the perfect grin. And,
you know,
the sometimes stiff performance.
He is.
Well, he wouldn't be an action star without the stiff performance.
That's right, yeah.
That just goes with the territory.
Yeah, but The Rock. I think I'm developing a man crush on The Rock. Because the guy's funny.
It's okay ripped. To admit it.
Yeah. See, I saw him in The Scorpion King when I first saw him, and I thought, fuck, this guy doesn't have a career.
Well, no, not if he looks so rubbery CGI.
Yeah, that was horrible CGI.
Well, yeah. That would have been The Mummy, too. But
yeah, yeah, but you know when I knew he'd had a career? Was in that Be Cool. Bad movie, but he was awesome in it.
Yeah, he was.
He was epic.
When you can stand out in a bad movie,
yeah.
There's something there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was when I knew that he was going to be successful as an actor.
There you go. Look at this. We got to give you a little bit of bonus Rock talk and a brief review of Tomb Raider, because honestly, we're never going to cover that on the show otherwise, because it's a reboot, not a remake. They have nothing to do with each other. Unless I bring on one of my video game buddies to talk about the comparison between the video game and the movie.
Yes.
But they're tough to get a hold of. So yeah. I actually have a friend who's actually a video game developer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that would be an interesting conversation.
One day I might pull him in for that talk. I don't know. We'll see.
It'll be a bonus episode somewhere down the line.
Maybe. Anyway. Let us know if you guys want to hear that. If that's something that interests you, if you want us to compare to a different medium as a special one-off, you can let us know at Invasion Remake on Twitter. InvasionOfTheRemake@gmail.com is our email. And, of course, our Facebook and Instagram pages as well. We're Invasion of the Remake. Shock.
Big surprise there, right?
Wow.
You know, and while you're there, and if you're on Apple Podcasts as well, leave us a brief review if you like the show. If you didn't, it's like you just robbed a bank. Don't ask, don't tell. So just run like a motherfucker and keep on running.
Run like Tom Cruise.
Run like Tom Cruise.
And keep going.
Run like you just came out of the sphincter of an alien ship.
Tom Cruise is a piece of shit.
Allegedly. Yeah, so leave us those stars. Leave us comments. If you've got a recommendation for us or a challenge, it's been a while since we got a challenge, although we got one waiting in the wings right now that we're going to get to. We've got a couple actually waiting in the wings, so we'll be hitting some of those very soon. But we're always up for a challenge, and if you've seen some of our fan challenges, they're very strange.
They are very strange. They take it's us so much some, fun to do.
You take us into some weird places, people, and I love you for it. So, we've done Hard Rock Zombies. We've done
Meet the Feebles.
We did puppets. Yeah, that's right. We did puppets. We've done a Western musical.
Oh, I forgot that was a fan challenge.
We
did a Western. Did you guys do paint the?
Yeah, we did paint your wagon. We did Paint Your Wagon.
Clint Eastwood's best work.
And we really enjoyed it.
We did really enjoy
so
it.
So much fun. So we got some more coming up for you this year. So stay tuned. And if you've got things you want us to do, we'll definitely consider them. We always take into consideration. And if you got some comments about older episodes, we'd love to hear it as well. And we can always maybe follow up on some of that if you've got some insights. So we'll read some of those insights on the air.
I got a comment about one of your older episodes.
What's that?
That Conan episode? Best episode ever.
Where Tyler made his debut, I think. I think that might be it. This is your third go-round for the show now, isn't it?
Fourth,
yeah. Look at that. You are now leading the pack.
Oh, am I?
For guests.
Feel special.
There you go. Our most recurring guest now, I think.
I think he's tied with Val.
Oh, yes, yeah, Val.
Actually, I think Val's one ahead of him.
Val might be still one ahead.
Yeah.
Because she was a guest on the show as somebody else.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Once. She played 2016 from New York.
From New York. But yeah, certainly Tyler is definitely one of our more consistent guests.
Yes, considering we don't do a lot of guests anymore.
No.
With Trish going through some stuff right now with her family, and she should hopefully be back soon, but we might pull in a couple more guests in the meantime while she's away, but can never replace her. Can only substitute for now, but don't worry, she will be back with her wit, wisdom, and opinions as well.
That's right. So no more Jay Leno, no more Joan Rivers. We'll get back to Johnny.
That's right. Back to Rat.
Back to Rat.
Back to Rat. You know what? Tell your friends about the show. Tell them where to find us. We are on a ton of different platforms. Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Blueberry, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Spreaker, and
freaking YouTube.
Yeah, freaking YouTube. Freaking YouTube. Actually, they gave me another... did another claim, and I'm like, you guys don't own it either. Fuck you. So I'm waiting to hear back from that. That's all automated shit, so...
Yeah,
it's always every time I get a video clip, and if some jackass uses a sample in a song, that's when I get nailed. And I'm like, you don't own the fucking thing either. So at least allow me to use it, because I'd be damned if you guys earn money off my video for it.
Actually, funny, that's the way I listen to you guys is on YouTube now.
And we got a lot of fans on YouTube, and we thank you for it. But there sometimes YouTube gets in the way, and we have to edit things out, or sometimes I ditch the entire episode off of there if it's too much trouble. So it's not the best platform, but most of our episodes will be hitting YouTube in some form. But if you want the unedited and uninterrupted episodes and
the always on the go episode,
all the way always on the go episodes, hit us on any one of those, pretty much any platform for podcasts. If we're not on a podcast app that you currently use, let me know.
Spotify.
And we'll get on there. It's something I'm working on. They're almost as picky as YouTube. That's kind of why I haven't set us up on Spotify. But if you want us on Spotify, let me know. I'll do it. I'll go through the headaches.
It's probably one of the most popular apps out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Nowadays, I've been thinking about it. I'm like, yeah, I guess we should get us up on Spotify.
Even I got a Spotify account.
Okay. Thanks, Tyler.
Mr. Get with the Times, Mr. Technological and stuff.
I'll stick with my completely less than awesome Amazon Music. Step it up, guys. Step it up. That's all I'm saying. Step it up. Your music platform kind of sucks right now. Unless you want my podcast, then you're awesome.
Yes.
But I don't know how to submit to that yet. But if I can get us up on Amazon Prime Music, I will.
That would be very cool.
I don't think they have any podcasts on there yet. So maybe we can be the first. I don't know.
There you go, Amazon. Check it out.
I don't know. They love us over there on Amazon, I'm sure.
Yeah, because they're listening.
Yeah, of course they are. Of course they are.
Oh, totally. Everybody listens.
All right, guys, that was War of the Worlds, 53 versus 2005 versus 1938 versus 1897. I don't know. It's not so much a versus as inspired by it. I'll go right back to 1897. So
that was, yeah.
All's wells with the wells is.
Ziz.
All right, I'm Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I'm still Tyler.
And... we are out of here.
The Martians had no resistance to the bacteria in our atmosphere, to which we have long since become immune. Once they had breathed our air, germs which no longer affect us began to kill them. The end came swiftly. All over the world, their machines began to stop and fall. After all that men could do had failed, the Martians were destroyed and humanity was saved by the littlest things which God in his wisdom had put upon this earth.